Rwandans embrace the truth. At that time, there were only about 11 publishers in the country, most of whom were not Rwandan citizens. Among the first Rwandans to learn the truth was Justin Ruagatore. He started studying in the Swahili language with special pioneers from Tanzania, as they could not speak French or Kinyarwanda. Outgoing and friendly, he was baptized in 1976 and lived in Sava, where the King of Rwanda had first permitted Catholic missionaries to establish a mission in 1900. Justin recalls that people were curious to know what the Bible really teaches. However, the clergy were hostile toward Jehovah's Witnesses and forbade their flocks to listen to them or accept their literature. Ferdinand Mugarua, a tenacious brother, was another one of the first Rwandans to accept the truth. In 1969, while living in eastern Congo, he acquired a copy of the book, The Truth That Leads to Eternal Life, in Swahili. Later, when he found out where the nearest witnesses were, he and two companions would leave home every Friday, walk 50 miles to attend the meetings and have a Bible study, and then walk home on Monday. Ferdinand was baptized in 1975 on the same day as one of his own Bible students. Appointed to serve as a special pioneer in Rwanda in 1977, he remembers that the previous year, a circuit assembly was held in the living room of the Rakabubu's house, and 34 were in attendance. 3 were baptized. Missionaries denied entry. The governing body, ever alert to the needs of the worldwide field, had earlier assigned missionaries to Rwanda. In 1969, 4 graduates of the 47th class of the Watchtower Bible School of Gilead were invited to serve there. Nicholas Foney recalls, "In late January, Brother Noor handed out the class assignments. We heard him tell Paul and Marilyn Evans that they were assigned to Rwanda. He then said to my wife and me, 'And you are going with them.' We were very excited, and after the meeting, we rushed to the Gilead Library and got out a large atlas to find Rwanda. Later, though, we received a letter telling us that their brothers had been unable to obtain permission for us to enter Rwanda. We were disappointed, but accepted a change of assignment with Paul and Marilyn to Congo." In 1976, 2 other couples were assigned to Rwanda after graduating from the 60th class of Gilead. Allowed to enter the country, the 4 missionaries moved into a rented house, preached courageously, and began to learn Kinyarwanda. When their visas expired after 3 months, the immigration department refused to renew them, so the missionaries were reassigned to Bukavu, eastern Congo. They were hardworking. In the mid-1970s, the special pioneers from Tanzania and Congo began to leave Rwanda for various reasons. Meanwhile, Rwandan brothers began to pioneer and to expand the preaching activity to all parts of the country. Then, in 1978, the Truth Book and 2 tracts were translated into Kinyarwanda. In addition, a monthly edition of the Watchtower appeared. Those publications helped further the kingdom preaching work. Concerning those early days, missionary Manfred Tonak said of the Rwandan pioneers, "They were hardworking and they devoted much time to the ministry. New ones followed their example." Gaspar Nyongera relates how the good news was spreading in those days. "By the time I got baptized in 1978, the clergy were becoming fearful at seeing so many coming into the truth. Hundreds attended our assemblies. When we went out preaching, we were like a swarm of locusts." Quite often, about 20 publishers would leave from the town center of Kigali and go preaching on foot from there to Kanombe, a distance of about 6 miles. After stopping for lunch, they would continue another 4 miles to Masaka, before returning to Kigali by bus in the evening. Groups of publishers did similarly in other parts of the country. Not surprisingly, this intensive preaching gave people the impression that there were thousands of Jehovah's Witnesses. As a result, accusations were leveled against us, influencing the authorities to deny us legal recognition. Full of enthusiasm for the truth, brothers in Rwanda wanted to taste the joy of associating with their brothers from other countries. Thus, in December 1978, some 37 from Rwanda, including children, journeyed through Uganda to Nairobi, Kenya, a distance of over 750 miles, to attend the Victorious Faith International Convention. The trip was difficult, transportation was unreliable and breakdowns were frequent. Furthermore, Uganda was politically unstable. When the delegates finally reached the Kenya border, Ugandan border officials accused them of being spies, arrested them, and took them to army headquarters in Kampala, Uganda. Idi Amin, then president of Uganda, personally interrogated them. Satisfied with their answers, he gave orders to release them. Though they missed the first day of the convention in Nairobi, those brothers rejoiced to see thousands of brothers from many nations peacefully united. Efforts to acquire legal recognition. The Bible truths and honorable moral standards taught by the witnesses did not please everyone. The clergy in particular were dismayed to see that so many people responded. Brother Ruakabubu recollects, many who had been active Catholics, Protestants, and Adventists sent resignation letters to their former churches. Another brother said that the effect of the preaching work was like a fire set ablaze through the established religions. The number of those attending the meetings of the Kigali congregation soon increased to more than 200. In the beginning, the clergy did not take much notice of our presence because we were so few. However, as the numbers increased, some charged that we constituted a danger to the country. It is noteworthy that about this time, the Archbishop of the Catholic Church in Rwanda, Vincent Nsengiyumva, became a member of the Central Committee of the ruling political party. Since we were growing rapidly, we needed legal status in order to bring in missionaries, build kingdom halls, and hold large assemblies. The Kenya branch arranged for Ernest Hoysa from Belgium to contact government ministers to request legal recognition, but his efforts did not prove successful. Later, in 1982, the Kenya branch office advised us to prepare a letter addressed to the Minister of Justice and the Minister of the Interior requesting legal recognition. I signed this request along with two other special pioneers. However, no reply was received. In the meantime, opposition increased. Antoine Rugwiza, a quiet, dignified brother, remembers that in a national radio broadcast, the president declared that he would not tolerate those who denigrated the Rwandan faith. Everyone understood this to be a reference to Jehovah's Witnesses. Not long after that address, the brothers were forbidden to meet together. Rumors abounded that soon there would also be arrests. Brother Ruakabubu was summoned twice to the State Security Agency for interrogation. Then, in November 1982, Kiala Mwango, with his wife, Elaine, was sent from Nairobi to oversee circuit assemblies in Butare, Gisenyi, and Kigali. Brother Ruakabubu was the chairman at these assemblies. He had just completed the Kigali assembly when he was summoned for the third time to the presidency. However, this time he did not return. Within 4 days, the two other special pioneers who had signed the request for legal recognition were arrested. All three were imprisoned without trial or legal recourse. Other arrests followed. The Kingdom Hall was closed and its doors barred. A letter from the Minister of Justice to the prefectures put Jehovah's Witnesses under ban. Finally, in October 1983, a trial was held for the three brothers who had signed the application for legal registration. The court accused them of swindling and deceiving people, totally unfounded charges. Not a single witness or document was presented as evidence during the trial. Nevertheless, the three brothers were sentenced to 2 years in prison. When convicted murderers were released under an amnesty program, these faithful brothers were not shown any favor. In Gisenyi, five other witnesses endured almost 2 years of imprisonment without sentencing or a valid court order. Life in prison. Life in prison was grim. Prison meals served once a day consisted of cassava and beans. Meat was on the menu only about once a month. The bedding had bed bugs, but because of overcrowding, many prisoners slept on the floor. Water for washing was scarce. The brothers shared quarters with condemned and violent criminals. Prison guards were often harsh, though one of them, Jean Fataki, was kind to the brothers. He accepted a Bible study, eventually became a baptized witness, and has served as a faithful pioneer to this day. Brother Ruakabubu recalls, "While we were in prison, the Archbishop held Mass there. he told his audience to beware of Jehovah's Witnesses. Afterward, some of the Catholics present asked us why the Archbishop had said this, as they could see that Jehovah's Witnesses were not dangerous. Meanwhile, Roger and Nuella Pouls arrived in Kigali from Belgium. Roger had a work contract. The three brothers were still in prison, so Roger requested an audience with the Minister of Justice to explain our beliefs and ask politely what the government had against Jehovah's Witnesses. The minister cut the conversation short by saying, "Mr. Pouls, I have heard enough from you. You will be put on the next plane to Brussels. You are expelled from the country." Since the three brothers remained firm and were not intimidated, they had to finish their two-year sentence, though for the second year, they were transferred to a prison where the conditions were much better. They were released in November 1984.